Oh, cool.
Well, hey, everybody, this is Dave Kruger. Welcome. I appreciate you joining me, and I look forward to our collaboration together. You probably saw an email from me asking a couple of questions. If we were to sit down face-to-face right now, what's the most important question you have about this topic? And 4 weeks from now, if you walk away saying this is one of the best seminar series I've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Now, think about how that's very similar to what we do with our clients. What would you like to focus on, and where would you like to get to? So there's a similar configuration here. Thank you for those of you who have sent in responses to those questions. I look forward to getting others, and I know some of you registered late, and you just got my email probably minutes ago. Anybody want to say hi or respond to either or both of those questions right now as we begin?
Hi, Dave. This is Shelley Till, just jumping on.
Welcome. Hey, it's great to have you here. Super.
Thank you.
Shelley is a sports performance coach, and we've collaborated about some things, and she's familiar with this material, so I look forward to her jumping in without invitation whenever you would like to. So that's super. You see the outline and the resource guide that's downloadable. I hope you've done that and printed them so you can follow along on the outline without having to take a bunch of notes maybe. And it's the same page where you see the four ports for the recordings. If you want to go over anything or if you have to miss something. So any other responses to either of those questions or anything else to talk about briefly? I'll go on lecture mode in just a moment. I'll also reserve some time at the end. So at the beginning and the end of each of the four seminars, we'll have time for discussion. So who else? Other responses or questions or comments?
This is Marguerite.
Hey, welcome from Canada. How you doing, girl?
I'm good, Dr. Dave.
All right.
So
super.
I'm Marguerite O'Neill. I lost my question.
Yeah, I got your questions. In response generally, not to yours specifically, and I appreciate yours. I'm not going to be doing a bunch of research review because this is more about application. My work is to take all of the research, mine and significant others, and distill it in a way that it can make it experience near and useful for you as coaches. So you won't be hearing a bunch of references or a bunch of research if I do my job, because I'm making it where you can actually do that and find ways to use it optimally with clients. One of the other questions was about enhancing practice. I know this is not about marketing, but hopefully these discussions will catalyze some ideas and applications that may be new or different, and especially in applying the mind and brain sciences to what we do every day in mentor coaching. These are just a couple of the components, the stress mastery and peak performance, that represent a whole area of work that I've been immersed in for the last 18 months to generate new material and new contributions to coaching. So other responses, other questions, or things you'd like to talk about briefly before we officially get started?
Hi, Dave. It's Carlene phoning from Canada also.
Welcome. Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. I'm not prepared for this, so I'm just going to kind of listen in the background, and I will take notes. I hope that's all right.
Oh, that's great. I mean, you're prepared because you're here. And I would suggest, if you can, print out the outline so that you can just follow along a bit more without feeling lost or without taking too many notes. I think that will be orienting for you. And also, there are I would suggest each of you print the resource guide. It's not a bunch of stuff, but there are some key components of it, and especially this seminar. I'm going to be talking about a microsystem of understanding and regulating states of mind, and it's a single page. It's the neural conditioning program. You've each who have been around me at all have heard me say many times, if you want to really change a habit or create a new one or help someone change, focus on the system, not just the goal. So the neural conditioning program is a micro system. The roadmap is a macro system. We'll go into that and look at that, but just talk practically, hopefully, about some of the aspects that I think you're seeing every day, and this may help you look at it in a new and different way. So thanks, Carlene. Who else?
Sandra Newton from North Carolina.
Welcome. Hey.
Hi.
Any comments?
I'm just excited to get started.
Okay. Well, super. Great. I know that there are, I see on my dashboard, there are a large number of people. Thank you for managing the background noise. So basically, if you're not about to make a comment or ask a question, if you would stay on mute, *6, in just a minute I'll put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about it. But thank you for managing the background noise. And remember, when you get ready to make a comment, do an unmute, *6 again, so that we'll have the benefit of your thoughts or comments. So a final call. Any other thoughts or questions or answers to those two questions as we start?
Dr. Dave, this is Deborah.
Deborah, okay. Hey, welcome. How are you?
Thank you for responding to my email. It's been a while. Welcome to everybody. I've missed you all. Anyway, I'm calling in from South Texas here in Corpus Christi.
Well, as you know now, I am a Longhorn in recovery, also known as an Aggie husband. So I know with your PhD and at A&M in position, that's a privileged place to be. So, and thank
you. I'm rooting for your wife, rooting for her. She'll get there. Go Aggie.
Exactly.
Give them. Okay. Well, I just wanted to let you know I made it on the line,
okay,
and I'm happy to be here.
Super.
Thank you.
There was someone else who spoke at the same time as Deborah. Would you jump in now?
Hi, it's Shoni. I'm calling from Singapore, originally from Canada.
Hey, welcome. Yeah, how are you? Man, how did you get over there? How are you doing?
My husband is Singaporean, and I'm doing really well. Yeah, thanks.
Are you doing a coaching practice by telephone or by video conferencing?
Yep, I'm doing it by telephone. I just finished my CTA in February, so with Nan. So now I'm taking this course.
That's great. You know, isn't this a great time with all that's going on to be doing something that we love, feel passionate about, and can make a huge contribution, and do it by telephone or by video conference? What more could we ask?
Exactly.
It's perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to put us on lecture mode and move into the material. And remember, if you have any questions or thoughts or just for clarification, jot them down and we'll have a bit of discussion at the end. Okay, welcome to the Stress Mastery and Peak Performance series. We're going to look at the latest research and application on optimum performance under pressure and a practical understanding and strategies you can use for yourself and your clients in business, the arts, sports. There's a lot of information I want to share with you. The outline is the synopsis of the important aspects so that you can track it and have an idea of where we are in the scheme of things. So, and again, this is being recorded for online playback. The ports are at the page you were sent for the download of the outline and the resource guide. My hope is to be able to co-create with you in this collaboration a peak experience in itself. Seminar one, we're going to talk about stress mastery strategies and tools. When I was in the singles ski lift line at Steamboat Springs about to advance to the chairlift, an instructor behind me who had five kids, all about age six, asked me if I would mind if two of them rode the chairlift with me. Well, of course, I welcomed the opportunity. As we got on the lift, the little girl next to me had a kind of an awkward seating, kind of slumped a little bit as we were riding and talking. As we got sort of close to the end of the lift, for her to ski out of the chair, she said in a very timid voice, kind of leaned over so her buddy may not have heard it, "I'm scared to get off." And I said, "I understand." And then I asked, "Do you know who Laurie Hernandez is?" It was just after the 2016 Summer Olympics when Laurie had won a gold in the team event and a silver on the balance beam. Her name was everywhere, basically. The little girl looked at me and said, "Yeah." And I asked her if she would like to know what Laurie did when she was scared about performing her gymnastics routine. And she immediately said, "Yeah." I told her that Laurie did three things. She pictured herself doing a perfect routine, a vision of exactly how she would perform. Then, the instant before she began, she took a deep breath to breathe in relaxation, breathe out any tension, and said to herself, "I got this." Well, my new little buddy seemed interested and sat just a little bit more upright. As we were just a few seconds from getting off the lift, I asked her what she was going to say to herself as she got off. And she said in a kind of a hesitant, a little bit timid voice, "I got this." And I nudged her. I said, "Say it like you really mean it." Then in a voice that seemed to channel all of her 5.5 years into someone I would not want to meet in a dark alley, she said very confidently, "I got this." As she skied out of the chair perfectly, she stopped, turned to look at me from about 10 feet away. At the same instant, we did a 1-inch air fist bump. We both smiled, and she skied off with her instructor. So let's look at a brief overview of what we're going to be talking about. In the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain sciences, neuroscience, psychology, performance sciences, to apply new tools to engineer optimum performance. I want to synthesize and integrate these new frontiers to help you consistently attain peak performance mentally and physically, and coach it with your clients. Neuroscientists estimate that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. This means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, attachment patterns. This operating system ghostwrites beliefs, emotions, and patterns of behavior and attachment. The shadow story system operating on unconscious autopilot. Now, a script refers to the default mode of expectations, experiences, and responses of how we write our stories. Our expectations inform attachment and behavior patterns that result in a typical, even stereotypical, response to most situations. As we repeat patterns, our brain wires those as the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates largely without conscious thought. At a family gathering or a board meeting, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then order the same thing. To deconstruct this system, to understand the algorithms and patterns of these attachment relationships and performance behaviors, we have to examine this default mode, the script. Change involves breaking the script and having a new system to inform writing a new story, a new performance story. We can engage in self-directed neuroplasticity, in other words, to create new behavior side by side with unlearning old automatic behavior. The approaches to changing behavior that work also consider what this is doing to your personal stories. And this is something I want to emphasize because we're going to come back to it. Along with learning new behavior, what often gets left out is the unlearning component about the old story. You can't just add something new and expect it's going to overwrite what's already there. Now, in this series, we're going to examine how to create new mind software and write new code for your brain, a systematic approach to create changes of mind, brain, and behavior that last. When Dr. Helen Czerski was studying physics at Cambridge, she was in her grandmother's kitchen looking at textbooks and charts of quantum mechanics. Her grandmother looked at her material and said, "What can you do when you know that?" Dr. Czerski spent an entire lifetime answering her Nana's question, and the unspoken follow-up question that she knew her Nana thought but kindly didn't say as she waited for the answer: "And why should I care?" Now, we're about to answer Nana's two questions, spoken and unspoken. Science is about patterns, the fundamental laws and principles that form the foundation of our lives and world. The brain is a pattern-seeking organ. Many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to the way the mind and brain work. It's not about having all the answers, since most of our operating system is unconscious and not directly accessible anyhow, but about having the informed framework to ask the right questions and an evidence-based system to implement strategic change for best results. In other words, to create an optimum performance story. How many of you know how to program a computer? Algorithms, pattern sequences. An algorithm is a finite series of steps used to solve a problem or make a decision. Don't worry if any of you said, "Well, not much. I just learned consistently how to turn mine on last year." I'm going to teach you how to reprogram your mind software and rewire your brain. I've developed two proven systems to apply to stress mastery and optimum performance that we're going to go through together. One is the neural conditioning program. It's a systematic way to identify stressful emotional triggers and to rewire planned ideal responses for peak performance. It's a micro system. The second is the ROADMAP system. The ROADMAP is the acronym for the seven steps of a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personal performance and to systematically write a new code explore mind, brain, and behavior to perform under pressure. It's a macro system. But now, here's a word on the limits of algorithms. This comes from Harris County Judge Ed Emmett. For Houston, Texas, 3 500-year floods in 3 years means either we're free and clear for the next 1,500 years or something has seriously changed. So let's first look at several minds, two brains, one focus. Several minds. A state of mind is like a software program that determines what we perceive, how we process information, and then how we respond. Our minds consistently monitor and interpret to give us a running account of what's happening, what it means, and what to do. But that's the system we've programmed. Another person alongside us will have a slightly different to surely different software program processing the same stimuli. Each mindset is its own software system, complete and internally consistent. And I emphasize that because when you go messing around with a client and disrupt the way that they see things and how their mind and brain works, you have to be really collaboratively aware, empathically sensitive, and aware of how these things work. This is exactly what we're going to talk about. Mindsets frame the ongoing process of our operating system. Mindsets include the powerful beliefs that inform the stories we write about ourselves. Researchers at Norwegian University of Science and Technology recently discovered that the brain creates multiple independent maps while finding its way in the physical world. The human brain, in other words, operates like a Google map. When a new situation arises, a different map is booted up. We have different states of mind or mindsets for different situations. This explains how important it is to understand the context and framing for different situations and to have a cohesive story to organize and direct that series of maps. A story is how we understand things, how we make sense of things. So we need to be aware of our own stories. State always comes first. Those of you who have hung around me at all have heard me repeat that. The state of mind first, then strategy and story. A state of mind boots up a particular software program with its predetermined meanings, connections, and internal associations. Within a state of mind, just as within any single software program, the patterns are predictable and consistent. When Susan gets angry with someone on the executive team, she'll become more authoritative and demand better performance. When Robert's confronted with a challenging task, he will engage an attachment pattern to get someone to make a decision that he'll sign off on. This systematic approach to breaking the script, understanding it first and then breaking it only in areas where it may be improved or doesn't work, addresses the default mode of algorithms that are played out in relationships, behaviors, emotions. To revise the story, we first have to understand the script and then have a systematic way to address change, to recognize and own the process, to assess what to do differently, and to create a systematic way of change. Those are the first four steps in the roadmap. The initial step of perturbation of the default mode is by definition uncomfortable as it breaks a script and the automatic responses. A default mode, the script, has its own continuity, and we feel comfortable when things are certain. We're uncomfortable with change when we activate new processes that are different and disrupt the default mode. But that's how we learn. We don't learn when we follow the script and it works. A stimulus, such as a memory, a thought, a person, a place, can instantly shift our attention. Once we focus on the stimulus, it boots up a state of mind that then determines how we perceive and process everything that follows. Two crucial elements in performance become how to boot up an optimum mindset and how to fully develop skills within that mindset for the best results. To enhance capacity and performance requires deliberate practice, which is itself an entire science that we will examine, and systematic execution for peak performance. We're going to examine both of these in detail. So here's a kind of simple application at this point, surface and shadow stories. The surface story is our usually logical, conscious intention and aspiration. It's what we are aware of, that's logical, conscious, reasonable. This is what I want from life. These are my goals. Now, the shadow story that ghostwrites most of our behavior, remember that 90-95% of our operating system is automatic and unconscious. This shadow story may be driven by beliefs such as, well, I can't really get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I need, or I don't think when push comes to shove I'm really going to be able to do it, so I'm going to back off and just save face before I get there. When the surface and shadow stories go in opposite directions, stuckness results. The surface story and the shadow story express the desire and the obstacle, often simultaneously. The surface story sees, for example, money as security, freedom, pleasure, or worth, depending on the individual. But the same brain may be wired to link it to the shadow story of greed or evil or selfishness. A simple example of a surface story: I want to generate more income and create wealth, may be countered by a shadow story such as, I have what it takes, or I wasn't born to have money, or what if I try my best and can't do it? You can see how the surface and the shadow story can go in opposite directions. Or for a couple, the two surface stories can be in contradistinction. One partner sees money as freedom and wants to be able to spend and enjoy life. The other partner is wired to see money as security, so savings. So that's where your work as a couples coach will come into play. We want one thing, but may unconsciously want and do something else. What results reveals which is stronger. An inhibition is often the expression of a conflict between the surface and the shadow story, simply in an attempt to avoid the dissonance of conflict. Inhibition then becomes the cure for that conflict. Here's something that I want to emphasize. I'm not going to do anything dramatic like say it slowly, but just this is important, I think. The biggest obstacle that keeps us from having what we want is the story that we create about why we can't have what we want. I can't find the time. I'm not sure it'd be worth it. I may not know what to do. Now, the second component, two brains, the top-down and the bottom-up systems. We have essentially two independent brain operating systems, often with competing interests, trying to balance urges with logical reasons. The most pressing conflict is not between us and the rest of the world, but between our two brain systems. This is huge in recognizing how we can facilitate this process of developing a story with our client and knowing these things. We want to save for the future, yet enjoy spending money on a purchase now. We want to be healthy, but we want cheesecake with the strawberry topping. The balance can be tipped in various ways. Add a little bit more strawberry topping. When we write two stories simultaneously that go in opposite directions, it's not a metaphor, it's brain chemistry. One example is the reward center of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, that releases the pleasure chemical of dopamine with the anticipation of a purchase. The pain center of the brain, the insula, responds when we have to part with our money to pay. The bottom-up system one runs automatically on impressions and feelings. It's immediate and intuitive. This subcortical circuitry notifies the neocortex, the brain's frontal topmost areas from below. Bottom up consists of our impulses, our habits, our reflective attention. Since it's quick and impulsive, it requires focus and strategies to develop everything from self-awareness to deliberate planning. The bottom-up system one operates automatically, and it can't be turned off at will. So this makes errors of intuitive and emotional origins difficult to prevent. Look at the emotional reactivity to the stock market right now, a decline of 27% of value this month. The top-down system, too, is the conscious, logical seat of self-control for executive functioning and reasoning. This top-down system determines voluntary attention and choice, the consideration and deliberation of decision-making. When the bottom-up system prevails, decisions shift toward impulsivity, overspending, overborrowing, overeating, other addictive habits, or just impulsive decisions can occur without conscious regulation or direction. Now, we have an answer to that. This is not anything that I would ever say with a client, by the way, and I'm not saying this to you so that you can educate your client, but saying this to you as a backdrop for a look at how we can systematically go about collaboratively creating changes with clients. An awareness of the factors which lower our threshold to resilience against impulsivity also become essential to recognize. And a particularly challenging problem is the presence of unconscious biases that we have pre-programmed into the bottom-up system without conscious awareness by the top-down system. Willpower is a triumph of the top over the bottom system. Willpower means we stay focused on our goals despite the urges of impulses and passions along with the default mode of habits. Willpower can be influenced by a number of variables that can deplete it. Stress, sustained mental effort, even low glucose. We'll return to this in terms of how to deal with this strategically with clients. And finally, one focus. Several minds, two brains, one focus. A pro tennis player was having an outstanding season in her career. We met just before she left for Wimbledon, where she was one of the top seeds. She was having difficulty with her serve, and her usual powerful, flawless serve was strained. I asked her to take us frame by frame through her usual flow pattern of serve. Then, side by side, to describe what she was experiencing now, frame by frame, so that we could look at and see what was different. When she got to the point of tossing the ball in the air, she now had an instantaneous flash of her coach looking at her critically. This literal nanosecond of moving from the flow state of motor memory, of the procedural process that had become automatic, disrupted that well-grooved pattern. When she instantaneously and almost imperceptibly moved from total reliance on her bottom-up system one of automatic superb performance, well-grooved from tens of thousands of hours of practice, to her top-down system two to think about what she was doing, she hit the ball slightly differently. At her level of play, this meant everything. This nanosecond of the shift was the choke that disrupted her flow. We'll return to that in terms of addressing it. The power is in the focus. The unconscious mind does not distinguish positive versus negative, does not recognize future versus past, but only on the focus, the here and now focus. This is the power of selective attention. The brain works like a camera. Out of all the possibilities you choose to focus on, determines the awareness and aligns the energy field of the brain for attention. Attention holds the key to choice architecture. Attention serves to regulate emotion and thus the state of mind that's chosen for a task. Successful performance execution depends on directing and sustaining focus to a specific choice and ignoring others. Here's a specific and simple practical application. My wife gifted both of us with an enrollment in the BMW Racing School in Greenville, South Carolina for our 10th anniversary. It was a fascinating and masterful application of performance science as we went through various aspects of driving challenges with pro racers over several days. One of the early basics they taught us was how to navigate sharp turns and curves at high speed. Since our brains follow our eyes, when we look at where we want to go, we create a successful turn even under pressure. If we look at the obstacle we want to avoid, our brain follows our eyes there too, and we get what we focus on. Focus on avoiding the obstacle, and you will regularly hit it. This has application for something we probably won't have time to talk about, but it's the distinction of playing to win versus playing not to lose. When a coach focuses on what not to do with players, it becomes a prelude to a choke. An individual getting analytical, especially self-critical, disrupts the flow of that bottom-up system to move outside the zone to become an observer with the prefrontal cortex. The most fundamental principle is one we know quite well from neuroscience and quantum physics. You get what you focus on, not what you want. So look where you want to go from the next curve to 20 years from now. Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian with 22 medals, including 18 golds, described the significance of focus. When I'm focused, there's not one single thing, person, anything that can stand in my way of doing something. If we want something bad enough, we're going to get it. If I want something bad enough, I'm going to get there. We literally mold our brain pathways and synaptic connections by what we focus on. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when we focus on solutions. But the already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems, even if you try to solve them. That's exactly what we do in mentor coaching. This is why people can get stuck in therapy or in simply seeing problems. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. These brain connections literally become mind maps and then subsequently influence the reality that we see. While we can't control what happens to us, we can determine how much it affects us and where we direct our focus and attention. A simple example is rather than focusing on obstacles that hold us back, to refocus on things that move us forward and the positive connections. Here's a brief summary, a simple summary of a three-step process to specifically counter negative thought or self-talk, recurring things that you say to yourself that seem to interfere or inhibit or just negative self-talk messages. Reframe the thought as an error message from your brain. Remember that when we do things repetitively, the brain wires a response. So that response is already wired in your brain. It's not going to help you to revisit it or try to engage it to counter it. Simply reframe the thought as an error message from your brain. Two, delete it. Refocus then, thirdly, on what you do want that's positive and part of your plan. A very simple three-step process to refocus on what you do want. Consider maybe a delete button. Consider it visually in your brain so that when you think of something negative or have an intrusive thought, it becomes a simple visualization of deleting that negative thought. And this is simply to say, don't believe everything you think. So let's look now at regulating states of mind and managing emotions. A state of mind is a set of particular emotions, memories, mental models, and behavioral patterns. A key element of mastery is to become aware of our various states of mind with a particular focus on what state works best for what purpose. The greatest challenge is to regulate states of mind through different emotional triggers and charged situations. This is what you're going to see with every client at various times. It is the most important variable to determine successful performance of any type, athletic to intellectual. The state of mind determines the meaning you attach. The meaning determines behavior. So by changing the state of mind, you change the behavior. Self-regulation is the key ingredient to optimum performance, from executive to academic to athletic. At times, the foreground challenge is to delay an impulse. The greater the emotional charge, the stronger the challenge to put an impulse into action. Emotion can even trump the best plans. When an urge is fused with action, that's the definition of impulsivity. A pause between urge and action creates a contemplative space where judgment can reside. Now, here's what we know. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset than with motivation and intelligence. When a performer in every endeavor, athlete, surgeon, executive, has practiced essentially the same thousands of hours as the next person, optimum performance is determined more by specific mental state for that performance. Some factors that lower the threshold to emotional triggers that predispose us to compromise performances. Preset meanings like certain biases. These are all things to listen for. These are all, in my view, coachable moments. Depleted energy that lowers the threshold. Distraction. Emotional overwhelm. Too many choices can lead to choice paralysis. Significant emotional charge, in other words, emotional triggers. Or after experiencing ineffectiveness or powerlessness, or something really exciting. We're going to return to that in the final seminar because one of the greatest challenges is huge success. One example of such influence is how even slightly depleted energy can cause people to fall back to a default mode of thinking and deciding. Here's a study reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. 8 parole judges were studied for 3 years for their decision-making regarding applications granted for parole. The average rate of granting parole was 35%. The exact time of each decision was studied in relation to the judges' 3 food breaks, morning, lunch, and afternoon. After each meal, 65% of requests were granted. Just before noon and just before the end of the day when blood glucose was lowest, their approval rate dropped to almost 0%. And this study controlled for variables such as the type of case that was studied. At times of low blood glucose and greater fatigue, they resorted to more critical and judgmental thinking. I introduced this story as one of a series of strategies to a financial consultant and mentor coaching with me who had an upcoming 3.5-hour meeting with a client who would potentially invest $30 million with her. So we planned those breaks as well as some other things. Here's a goofy sidebar. Two studies from Italy showed that when you speak to someone's in someone's right ear, there is a 75% greater chance that they will agree with you than when you speak into their left ear. So I ask them, where are you sitting and where's your client sitting? And I realize I've been sitting at the wrong side of the table for my life all these years. Now, let's look at the state of flow for a moment. As few as 20% of people have a flow experience on a daily basis. 15% of people never really experience flow at all. In the zone of flow, we most likely perform at our personal best. In this zone, we most readily acquire and integrate new skills in deliberate practice. A typical result of not being in the zone of flow is that attention scatters. The zone experience is one of optimal performance, not only in sports, but in any area of functioning, from executive to parenting. Flow is a very specific state of mind of remaining fully and absolutely focused in the present moment to access and sustain peak performance. Highest performance is when this is within the state of flow to direct and channel skills, creativity, and training in the present moment. One pro athlete I worked with came to incorporate and apply everything that we had talked about, regulating states of mind and entering the flow of his performance mindset in his all-pro career. After every play, he automatically said to himself, reset. He knew that in order not to have an excitement or a disappointment carry over from the last play to the next sequence, he had to remain grounded and centered and redo that, reset, after every play to have optimum access to his incredible skill for optimum performance. Any disruptive emotion, a big win, a big loss, or disappointment can hijack attention and disrupt flow. So we need a way to manage emotions and regulate states of mind, especially at these times. So here's what we have, and here's what I want to emphasize and ask you to get out and look at. The neural rewiring for emotional triggers. Look at the neural conditioning program, the neural conditioning chart. It's in the exercises section, the end of the outline. We'll address self-regulation in a systematic way. Now, to illustrate the neural conditioning chart and program, I want to describe how I initially developed it. You'll get an idea of this. Barbara began one of our executive mentor coaching sessions to say she wanted to move to a personal focus the upcoming Thanksgiving holidays with her family. She mentioned a pattern each year that she goes home to her family, usually for one major holiday each year, and notices the same problems. She described the pattern with a lot of embarrassment. We have a big family gathering where my parents, brother, sister, and their families all come together for a holiday weekend, usually 3 days. I resolve before I leave, this time is going to be different, that I'll not get into arguments or struggles with my parents and brother and sister. I focus intensely on being balanced and not getting upset. I can usually last at least half of the first day, and then something happens and I lose it. By the end of the first day, I get in a fight with one of my family. That seems to escalate, and then fight with all of them, then we're a standoff for the rest of the holiday time. I first reflected, remember, state goes before strategy and story, how frustrating this must be for her to want an enjoyable holiday with her family, and how upsetting it was for her when this wasn't the case. Well, she wholeheartedly agreed. I ask, at the time you're in the middle of that upset, in arguments with them, what's the age of that conversation? She knew immediately what I meant. She didn't need any explanation. She said, early adolescence. It's like I'm 13 or 14 instantly and totally at that time, and I'm stuck there for the rest of the visit. I asked her specifically what she was aware of that triggered her reactions. She hadn't thought about it in that way, but she described, for example, a particular look from her dad, a word from her mother, a gesture from her brother that would instantly create the state change to her reactive mode of adolescent turmoil. I recommended that she schedule a time to do a brainstorming session with herself, an appointment with herself that would last maybe at least 30 minutes, no interruptions, no distractions, so that she could reflect on a new plan. I suggested that she write a list of each of the emotional triggers that she was aware of from each member of her family. This is column 1 in the neural conditioning chart. emphasizing that she remained grounded and centered while she was doing this. In other words, not to let it trigger her and get back in that state, but to remain an observer, to not reenter the state of upset with a trigger. I suggested that for each emotional trigger in her column one, that she put beside it her usual response, the usual thoughts, feelings, behavior. This, which is column two, the usual behavior of an instantly altered state of mind would include thoughts, feelings, behaviors, negative self-talk, overwhelming feelings that were her automatic reaction to the emotional trigger. This was her age 13 time capsule. I suggested then that she schedule another brainstorming session with herself on another day, at least one day in between, where she would think about two other things. A mantra for getting centered and present for each emotional trigger, column three. A mantra consists of three parts. A cue to initiate the process. Barbara decided to use a cue of touching her ring. A focus phrase to align the energy field of her brain, just two or three simple words, like relaxed and powerful. A physiology such as a deep breath for relaxation. Each emotional trigger deserves its own pairing with a mantra and ideal response. Now, the same mantra may work for all, but that's to be determined. Then, next, to write an ideal response, column four, for each emotional trigger in column one, so that you go across horizontally from the emotional trigger to the recognition of the state change to get grounded and centered as quickly as possible, and then have an ideal response already pre-planned to move into. So this proactive planning, instead of her usual reactive response, created a game plan for her personally challenging situation. She sent me her initial draft of the four columns, and I emphasized to her that the purpose of the first two columns was to cue her radar to recognize the triggers and the resultant state change as quickly as possible in order to use the mantra to get grounded and centered and then engage her ideal response. In our first session after the Thanksgiving holiday, I was eager to hear how it went. She immediately began the session saying that it was the best holiday she'd ever had with her family. There were times of challenge, just as there were even times when she would need to excuse herself to use the privacy of a walk or just going into the next room to get grounded and centered again in order to engage the behavior she really needed. And I had emphasized to her before, this is not the NBA. You have an unlimited number of timeouts. She was immensely pleased with her work, as I was for her. So here's a brief review of the steps of the neuroconditioning chart. Column one, the emotional trigger. It's to identify the emotional trigger that sets a reactive chain, beginning with a state change, into motion. You most likely can't change the external cue, but the recognition can begin a different trajectory for handling it internally and externally. Column two, the usual response, the altered state, the time capsule. This is where some frustration may have occurred in the past because there's nothing that's going to change by definition what's in a time capsule. You can't outthink it, outlogic it, therapize it, neutralize it, have catharsis and expression. It's a time capsule, so you don't want to fall into it, but circumvent. You create a new pathway in your brain. That's exactly what we do as coaches. Our compulsion to repeat is unrelenting, yet in repetition, we re-enter that time capsule, and it's an unchanging narrative script. So, it's as if the story we tell ourselves about who we really are becomes who we really are, our core identity, our reality. And column three, the mantra. Here's a brief story about that. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage out of 217 teams in his division nationwide. During practice, Reed had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. A dribble to cue it, a focus phrase such as relaxed and smooth. You want the phrase to fit the action that's about to follow, and a deep breath in to breathe in relaxation and breathe out tension. He also simulated, he also helped them put it in an output channel, simulated game conditions. He'd immediately blow the whistle, have somebody go to the line, and if they made the shot, they got to take a breather. If not, they did four laps. Because in a real game, you don't get to line up and shoot 30 free throws at the end of practice, at the end of the game, and count the best ones. In 2 years, the team was ranked number one in their division nationwide. In column four, ideal responses. For each emotional trigger, have a pre-planned ideal response. This pre-planning moves immediately into the ideal behavior, and the repetition of these steps going across horizontally will result in neural conditioning. It will rewire the brain. So the original trigger, the emotional trigger, will be rewired ultimately with repetition to the ideal response. So the flow across all four columns then, the neural conditioning chart brings conscious recognition of an emotional trigger that otherwise instantly creates a state change to an old state of mind with all of its inherent feelings, behaviors, and beliefs. So, in summary, column one and column two, the emotional trigger and usual response are simply to recognize more quickly an emotional trigger and the state change that it immediately induces. Cueing your radar to recognize this as quickly as possible means that you see the process as state change, not as caused by the content of column two. The content can seem like the cause. The negative self-talk, the upset, it's the result. Like a time capsule, that content will never change. You can't think, reason, feel, figure, or therapize your way out of a state of mind. You have to get grounded and centered. Column three. So rather than getting lost in the content of the state, which is so common to do, instead address the process by getting grounded and centered to move then to a pre-planned ideal response for each particular emotional trigger. So when you do this repeatedly, you're going to notice two things. The first is that you repeat your mantra of the cue, focus, phrase, and physiology enough that you'll notice simply the cue alone will be sufficient to induce a deep, grounded, centered state. You won't have to go through that every time. And as you move through all four steps to ultimately engage an ideal response, when you repeat it enough, it will rewire your brain. Ultimately, emotional trigger will automatically coupled with a balanced state of mind and the ideal response. The trigger won't be triggering. This is the hard work miracle. Your brain has rewired its operating system. And elite performers in business, sports, and the arts know and live the wisdom that the more enjoyable the experience, the better the performance will be. And that's why I want to leave you, many of you have heard this from me before, but I want to leave you with, again, the words of my favorite grandmother, who said it very simply, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Okay, we're in discussion mode. I'm interested in thoughts, questions, reflections that any of you have. Is this making sense to you so far?
Yes.
Questions or challenges with any of the material? I know I've condensed a lot. My dilemma always is that there's so much information I want to give you and condense it, but I know it's like, you know, asking for a drink, and here comes Kruger's fire hose. So this is why I particularly wanted to do an annotated outline so you could follow and go back over it and do the recording so that if there's something that didn't quite make sense, there's a chance it won't make sense the second time, but it may be helpful to go back over. Thoughts or questions that might be helpful right now to talk about?
About the emotional triggers, when you're talking about column one, column two, three, and four. Now, like the emotional triggers is what triggers them to react in the way that they do. And then for column two, the unusual responses is the the bad way they react, or that's the part I was trying to figure out.
Column two is the time capsule that's been in existence for all of time. For Barbara, whenever her mom would say a certain phrase or her dad would raise his eyebrow in a particular way, it instantly triggered all the experiences she had of seeing them as critical and pejorative and judgmental, and she instantly became 13 again and responded to that emotional trigger. Now, an emotional trigger can be words, a gesture, it can be any number of things that can serve as an instant trigger for a state change. The key here is that it's a state change that needs to be addressed, and this neural conditioning chart and program is to address the state change. It's to help regulate states of mind, to be aware of different states, and to have a system, a microsystem, to address regulating states of mind. A couple of studies more recently in Harvard Business Review and Scientific American Mind emphasized that the greatest factor for success for executives was self-awareness and regulation of states of mind. Now, they found that only because they studied executives. I would say that's the same for everyone across the board. Nowhere is it more poignant when performance is so on the line, so visible, as in sports, which is why I've used this as an application so often, because we see it so quickly. We see a focus. We can see an instant, for a nanosecond, derailment of the pro tennis player who instantly thought of her coach. It wasn't the image of her coach. It was the disruption of that flow that created that interruption in the flow pattern, the automatic memory of deliberate practice that created the disruption in her serve. And when she could sustain that flow, she didn't see that image. So the image itself, the content, again, is not the problem. It's the result. Thoughts or questions? Let me ask again, management of the background issues. If you're not, there's some noise in the background. If you're not about to speak, if you would stay on mute, star six, go ahead. I interrupted you.
I understand now. I just couldn't understand the visual response.
If there are things that still don't make sense to you guys, which is highly likely, jot it down, and we'll talk about it at the beginning of next seminar. But anything else for right now? I know we're over, but we'll take an extra minute. Anything else that might be helpful to talk about?
Dr. Davis, just a quick question. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to know if is the resource guide and exercise, is that for personal use, or are we going to do an overview of that as well?
The outline is to follow along and track things. The resource guide is for you to work on it yourself. That's for personal use, and I think it will bring home some of the concepts to apply them. It's a way of putting in an output channel. The reason I mention that, it's something that we do in coaching without necessarily understanding all the scientific reasons. But here's a simple example of putting things in an output channel. You know, we ask the client, what are you going to do and by when and all. University of Waterloo did a study in which two groups read the same passage out of a book. One group read the passage silently. The other group read the passage out loud. The group that read the passage out loud did 40% better on a test. They put it in an output channel. It completed the circuitry in their brain. There was a study, there was a comment by someone who spoke at the same time who deferred. Go ahead, please.
That was Marguerite, and I apologize for dropping off earlier. I am familiar with this chart as you had taught it to us in a separate program. And I have used it with my clients very successfully. What I do find is at the start, under old story, often they'll be describing their response or behavior to something, and I will ask them to just give me one word to label, or, you know, to describe is how I would say how they're feeling. And then that one word becomes the emotional trigger. You know, in other words, they're able to label it and get it out of their head, which frees up their brain to process what we're talking about. And then they can really get at the source of the emotional trigger faster. Does that make sense?
That's a great application. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Your check is in the mail. Thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate it. Well, think about this. See if it makes sense to you. Jot down any questions or comments you have. We'll pick up right here next time and reserve a bit of time at the beginning for discussion. And I'd suggest, looking at the resource guide, I'd suggest each of you taking some time to make that appointment with yourself, 30 minutes, to work on those first two columns for any emotional triggers, because we're going to come back to this when we look at the roadmap, which is a more comprehensive system of change. But this, to regulate states of mind, I think is a good beginning to take any emotional trigger that you have and go through this sequence with it to see what sense it makes to you and to see if it helps you understand, address, and regulate a state of mind that may be derailed by an emotional trigger. So thanks very much. Send me any more answers to your questions, to those two questions. I appreciate receiving them, and it helps guide some of my discussion. So I find it very, very useful, and I'm eager to hear your feedback. Thanks very much. We'll pick up right here next time. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.